Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. I'm your host, Thomas. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you're well. The way this podcast works is very simple. Just pick an episode, press play, and get comfortable in bed. I'll guide you through a short relaxation, and then I or one of my friends will read you a bedtime story designed to just gently grasp your attention and guide you off to sleep. And you will find that the more you tune in, the more effective the podcast will be at putting you to sleep. So wherever it is that you get your podcasts, be sure to follow or subscribe and make Get Sleepy a part of your nightly routine so that when you press play, your mind and body will know that it's time for a good rest. We'd love and appreciate if you would consider supporting the podcast by becoming a premium subscriber. You'll get a completely ad-free podcast feed, access to our entire back catalogue, and a new exclusive episode every Thursday. Tomorrow's exclusive on Get Sleepy Premium is a soothing story all about the picturesque English city of Oxford and its historic, famous university. If you're interested in signing up, go to our website at getsleepy.com/support, or simply use the link in the show notes to find out more. As for tonight, our story is narrated by Simon. Deep in the heart of Tibet, a group of monks embark on a journey to discover a special child. So, let's get settled in and prepared to drift off as Simon reads our story. It's time to leave the day behind. But before you do that tonight, why not think of a moment that you felt grateful for today? Whether your day has been eventful or quiet, there is always something to be thankful for. I'll give you my example. Today was market day in my hometown, and me and my other half are keen to support local businesses, especially at this difficult time. And so I took myself to the market to get some fresh fruit and veg. I, along with many others, was keeping as safe as I can, wearing my face covering and maintaining distance from others. And as we all queued up waiting our turn to look around the fresh produce store, there was a man who was kindly cleaning every basket for each customer. And he was acknowledging every person as they got to the front of the queue and having pleasant conversations from a sensible distance. And I thought that that was pretty special. The sense of community and everybody doing their bit, both to keep each other safe and happy. So that was a moment I felt grateful for today. So think about anything, big or small, that made you smile inside. And just let that feeling bring comfort to you as you lay in bed tonight. You're cozy and safe under your covers, and that's another thing to be thankful for. So rest your head on your pillow. Take a nice big stretch and feel your body sinking into the bed. let your thoughts make way for your imagination as it guides you towards the sweetest of dreams. Our story tonight begins in a place of great stillness and tranquility. It's a lake hidden in a remote mountainous area of Tibet. Nestled among rugged mountain peaks, the crystal clear waters are almost perfectly still. The gentle lapping of waves at the shoreline is the only sound for miles around.
Rashrang Rinpoche sat motionless next to Lamo Latso Lake. Grey wisps shifted every so often in the sky above the sacred place, nestled in a valley among the Himalayan mountains near China and Nepal. If the wind didn't wave his orange clothing, he would appear to be frozen in time. Many Tibetan Buddhist monks before and after Rashrang Rinpoche would venture to this lake in search of wisdom and spiritual guidance. Surrounded by mountain peaks, the lake was ever changing. One moment, it might be gloomy beneath the shadow of clouds, and the next, it might be bright and rippling in the wind. As the environment shifted, meditating monks could see images, flashes of insight on the surface of the water. That's exactly why Rashrang Rinpoche came here. After a lifetime of training and hours of stillness beside the lake, he saw something. In his mind's eye, a monastery appeared, marked by a gold and jade green roof. He saw a house with gutters made of juniper, a rarity in this part of the world. Lastly, he saw three Tibetan letters, R, Ka, and Ma. He knew this was an important insight, perhaps the most important one he would ever have. So he began the trek back to his home monastery to tell his fellow monks. Little did he know that a child had recently been born in that very home depicted in his vision. After the death of the 13th Dalai Lama a few years prior, a search party assembled to find his replacement. According to Tibetan Buddhism, after the Dalai Lama's death, his spirit reincarnates as a newborn baby. Finding this child is no small task, since the Dalai Lama is the foremost religious leader of Tibetan Buddhism. Rashrang Rinpoche's home monastery was also deep in the Himalayan mountains, not far from the sacred lake. From the monastery, he could see the snow-capped peaks all around. Clouds of fog swirled around the mountaintops, giving the place an ethereal quality. The monastery itself was made of white stone. It had several floors, with each floor slightly smaller than the one beneath it. A long staircase led up to the front doors. They were made of solid oak and gilded with gold accents. In the main hall of the monastery, the monks gathered around Rashrang Rinpoche. They all looked similar in appearance, with shaved heads and orange and red robes. With the soft-spoken confidence of a well-practiced monk, Rashreng Rinpoche described his vision and how he interpreted it. He believed that the letter R referred to Amda, a province in Tibet. He also suspected that the letter Ka stood for the monastery at Kumbum, which may have been the monastery from his vision. The last syllable, Ma, means authority or leader in Sanskrit, which was likely a reference to the Dalai Lama himself. The Panchen Lama, who was also part of the search team, was encouraged upon hearing this vision. As the second in command after the Dalai Lama, he had a key role in the search. He had been collecting information about children born in Tibet shortly after the Dalai Lama passed away. One of them had to be the reincarnated Dalai Lama. Now, the Panchen Lama could confine his search to Amdo, which narrowed the pool of candidates down to three boys. Early the next morning, the search party set out on the long road to Amdo. Some of the monks rode horses, the remainder walked purposefully along the countryside. The members of the party were quiet as they went, always engaged in silent meditation. The clopping of horse hooves on the dirt path was the only sound announcing their presence. The cold wind blowing across the Tibetan plateau pinched their cheeks. But the monks were prepared. They wore long robes made of cotton and wool and dyed in saffron. The robes were versatile, perfect for the Tibetan climate. In the winter, they were heavy enough to keep out the cold, and in the summer, they were loose enough to keep out the heat. After days of travel, they arrived in a small village where the first boy lived. His home was small and made of mud and rocks, much like other houses in Tibet. His parents welcomed the party inside, where the warmth of a fire offered relief from the cold. Immediately, members of the search party noticed that the boy had facial features similar to the previous Dalai Lama. He had a round face and kind eyes. However, when the Panchen Lama stepped forward to meet him, the little boy ran and hid behind his father's legs, afraid. His parents urged him to step forward and speak, but he refused. The Panchen Lama smiled at the boy and thanked his parents for welcoming him into their home. The shyness of a child is something worth appreciating, but the Dalai Lama was known to be courageous beyond the level of a grown man. This boy could not be him. The party left and made their way to the second boy's home. Once again, they set out by horse and foot across the Tibetan plateau. The second child's home was made of mud and rocks too, though slightly bigger than the last. Outside the house, a rainbow of prayer flags waved in the wind. Once more, the party was eagerly welcomed, and once more, they were hopeful. This boy was rather energetic, quite the opposite of the previous boy. The Panchen Lama asked the boy's parents if he could take a test. The boy grinned, showing his baby teeth, which were slightly yellow from drinking butter tea. His parents agreed, so the Panchen Lama brought out several items that had belonged to previous Dalai Lamas. Among the items were a few sets of prayer beads called mala. The mala were made of tiger's eye, a semi-precious stone. they reflected iridescent greys and browns in the firelight. The Panchen Lama also pulled out a prayer wheel and a bell. He carefully set these artifacts in front of the boy. But before the Panchen Lama could ask the boy a single question, the boy snatched the prayer beads and began to swing them around. His parents, embarrassed by their rambunctious child, took the beads from him and apologized profusely. The Panchen Lama was understanding. The energy and curiosity of a child is something worth appreciating, he said, with a warm smile. But still, something about the boy's outburst led him to believe that he was not the Dalai Lama. He was compassionate and particularly careful. He thanked the boy's parents for their hospitality. Now, only one boy remained, if they had interpreted Ra Sreng Rinpoche's vision correctly. The party had grown tired from travelling all across Tibet, but they carried on, knowing that this was the search of a lifetime. They followed the path to the monastery at Kombom. With its turquoise roof, it matched the monastery from Ra Sreng Rinpoche's vision. They passed snow-covered mountaintops and wide grasslands where Tibetan yaks grazed peacefully. The monks held out hope that Ra Sreng Rinpoche was right and that this final boy was the one they searched for. His name was Lamo Dondup, and he'd been born shortly after the 13th Dalai Lama died. Observant as always, the monks learned much about the boy as they neared his home. Like many in Tibet, his parents were humble farmers, keeping various animals like sheep, yaks, goats and chickens. They even had a few jomos, which are a cross between a yak and a cow. They grew potatoes, buckwheat and barley, the latter being a very important crop. Once harvested, barley was ground into flour and mixed with butter, tea and cheese to make a dish called sampa. It was often eaten at every meal. The party approached the boy's house. It was made of cement and stone that had been panelled over with dark, shiny wood. Ra Sreng Rinpoche focused only on the gutters lining the home's roof. They were made of juniper wood. This was the home in his vision at the lake. The search party had found the right place. He was certain of it. But he remained quiet. If the boy was indeed the Dalai Lama, the signs would be clear on their own. He knocked on the front door. The boy's mother opened the door and welcomed the monks inside. The search party didn't tell the family that they were searching for the Dalai Lama. Instead, they simply asked if they could stay the night. The monks carefully watched the child, who was wearing a robe a few sizes too big for him, probably a hand-me-down from his older brother. He had thick black hair and a serious gaze. He appeared neither happy nor sad, but fully present. One of the monks pretended to be a servant and spent the evening playing with the little boy. He was amazed when Lamo called him Sera Lama, because Sera was his home monastery. The child would have no way of knowing that. The monks left the next morning, but returned soon after in a formal procession. This time, they announced their true intentions. They believed that the child was the reincarnated Dalai Lama and wanted to test him. Lama's parents agreed, although they were surprised. Lamo's older brother had been recognized as the reincarnation of a different Lama at the age of 8, and it was rare to have more than one Lama in a family. The party had brought with them some items that once belonged to the previous Dalai Lamas and some items that belonged to other people. As with the previous boy, these items were a few sets of prayer beads, a few bells, and a few prayer wheels. The different sets of prayer beads were laid out before Lamo. Each set of beads looked the same, except for slight variations in colouring. Without a moment's hesitation, little Lamo reached forward and picked up a set of prayer beads. As he played with them, the monks looked at one another. The beads he picked had belonged to a previous Dalai Lama. Next, Lamo was presented with a few different prayer wheels. Once more, the prayer wheels were quite similar, except one had a long wooden handle. The boy picked up this prayer wheel. He shook it, but gently, as if he understood the importance of such an item. Indeed, this was the correct prayer wheel. Only one more test remained. Small metal bells sat on the table in front of him. Lamo looked at them, seemingly deep in concentration. His forehead scrunched as he focused. After much deliberation, he reached forward and picked one of the bells that had a little dent on the side. Lamo had to be the Dalai Lama. There was no doubt about it. The party had searched for nearly 3 years, and now they had finally found him. Still, they couldn't announce the good news until they had conferred with the other lamas. The monks carefully packed up the various objects and thanked the family for their hospitality. Days went by without a word from the search party. Lamo had almost forgotten about the kind band of monks that spent the night when, after several weeks, his mother heard a rumor that he would be named the 14th Dalai Lama, the foremost spiritual leader in the country. Lamo and his parents travelled to Kumbum Monastery for his official coronation. They journeyed on horseback through the night. As he wrapped his arms around his father's waist, Lamo couldn't see anything but the night sky. He couldn't feel anything but the cool wind against his face and the rhythm of the horse's steps as it trotted through the Tibetan grass. When the family arrived at the monastery, it was still dark outside. They were ushered inside into a hall lit with candles. The room was cavernous. Red mats and plush pillows lined the floor. At the front of the room sat a red and gold gilded throne. The long wall behind the throne was painted with a mural of many bright orbs in blue, orange, and green. In the center of the mural was a gold figure of the Buddha, his form surrounded by an intricate frame. Lamo changed into different clothes, ornate robes that flowed down to his knees and pointed cloth shoes. On his head sat a triangular hat with two flaps on the front near his forehead. The coronation ceremony was secretive, and the boy received a new spiritual name, Tenzin Gyatso. He was so young that he can no longer remember all the details of this ceremony. However, the 14th Dalai Lama did remember a few things. He recalled sitting on a throne, one that was red and gold. He remembered that the ceremony took place at sunrise. And he recalled seeing the bright orb of the sun as it floated above the mountains of his beloved homeland, Tibet.